Van Haltren. We also had help from Mary Donaldson, Mike Wall, Lori Seeby of KMXT in Kodiak, Vernon Jamagra, Thea Lawton, Rachel Tuya, Jennifer Canfield, and Lauren Dixon of KMBA in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding was made possible by the Rasmussen Foundation, the United States Artist Residency Program, Alaska Humanities Forum, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Special thanks to the Aleutic Museum, the Anchorage Museum at Rasmussen Center, and Cook Inlet Tribal Council, Incorporated. I'm Cheyenne Beattie, and this has been an Earth Songs documentary. Find us at earthsongs.net/coming home. Brought to you by Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service at nv1.org.
Nani imna kyaukhaka, nani imna iyu skadiye ni ribat, skadiye ich radoy iska.
Where is that absent one, my lad? Where are they? Where is that absent one? Let me search for him. Where should I search for that missing lad of mine? Up there, I wish I could search for him. Let me search for that missing one among those who whirl about.
Chahana ma will hadnut anidut kitamen. Chu me lat lamda, pehliatlin. Nu yamat lit nu pehludin, nu yamat lit nu pehludin, nu ten ke wa luda. Chu me lat lamda, chu me lat lamda. Pehliatlin. Nu ten de mam de dung habit imasu luda silu luda kuya good. Chu me la lamda, chu me la lamda.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
Andy Wawa looks a scream, and him on my woe. Andy Wawa, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Jeannie Kenmotsu. She's the Japan Foundation Associate Curator of Japanese Art and the Interim Head of Asian Art at the Portland Art Museum. She's here talking about Joryu Hanga Kyokai, which translates as Japan's Women Printmakers, a show on now at the Portland Art Museum through April 2021. Thanks for doing Art Focus, Jeannie, in person, in the gallery, with a socially distanced microphone. Thank you.
Thanks, Joseph. Actually, this is really fun that we can be here in front of the work today. I'm thrilled to talk to you about this show, Joryu Hanga Kyokai, 1956 to 1965, Japan's Women Printmakers. This is a show that came about when I was going through some of the work in our collection and realized that we had kind of a critical mass of work by these women who had been a member of this group, Joryu Hanga Kyokai, the Women Printmakers Society, can be translated. And I realized I had heard the name of this group, I've read about it, I mean, in the sense of I've seen it mentioned, but, you know, it's like a footnote. You know, so-and-so was also part of this group. And I realized I had never seen anyone write an article or do an exhibition of this group, and the more I learned about them going through our archives and going through their work, I realized this was actually a really important collective that was founded in kind of a grassroots way by the artists themselves. This is important because in the post-war sort of 1950s American occupation period in Japan, printmakers were getting a lot of attention, particularly from foreign audiences, particularly Americans, but Europeans as well. And it, almost exclusively, the attention was given to male printmakers, which is not surprising, but really gives you the sense that there were no women artists working in prints at the time, and this wasn't true. So in 1956, nine founding members got together, founded the society. Over the course of the next 10 years, they staged exhibitions in Tokyo, Osaka, Washington, D.C., Honolulu, New York City, and about 25 different artists actually joined the group over that decade. So this exhibition is kind of, I've been reflecting a little on some, I'm not positioning it as an intervention, but in my mind it is a little bit in kind of recovering some lost history. So I'm really excited to see all of the work up on the walls here.
So the show is, what, 35 prints, roughly? And it's in the Swindells and Krumpacker Gallery on the first floor in the Asian section. It's the last gallery. As you look around, generally, there is some pretty trippy stuff here. You know, there are bright colors and there are strange shapes. This is not traditional Japanese printing. These women came out of other disciplines, mainly painting. Tell us, why did they decide to print?
I think that decision was personal and individual for each of them. Some of it may have been access to materials. Several of them were married to printmakers. For instance, Yoshida Chizuko, one of the artists in the exhibition, married into a family of artists. And she was really an avant-garde painter. Really had not made any prints before she married her husband, Hodaka. But his family is an established printmaking family. Yoshida Hiroshi is a deeply beloved Japanese printmaker from mainly the first half of the 20th century. So those materials must have been right at hand in the studio, and I have to think that played a role.
The postcard image for the show is Jama Masjid, which is basically named after a mosque that Yoshida Chizuko saw on her travels. It's very abstract to me. It's purple, and what do you call that? The right-hand side is taken over by a large purple shape with dots on it, and then there are a couple of bold red sort of circles that look like splashes. They've been impacted onto the printmaking material. And then there's a kind of a wood grain pattern in gray. And then at the bottom, what looks kind of like in black and brown tree roots. Just tell us a bit about her style at this point in 1960. What was she doing? Because there is other work by her in the show.
Absolutely, Joseph. For me, this Jama Masjid print is really kind of signature Yoshida Chizuko. It really marks, you can see the influence of what she was doing in painting. She was working in abstraction. She grew up she was a dancer as a child and had some injuries and had to give it up, and shortly after that turned to other art forms. But music and dance play a role in a lot of her work. And I think, yes, this is a print about a monument that she saw, but absolutely you can see the way that she thinks about translating impressions and experiences into visual form. For me, the kind of rust brown, the mauve, and the bright red, and then this kind of shocking white, actually, that's thrown right in the center, is very Yoshida Chizuko to me. There's this organic quality, I think, to a lot of her work, even some of her later work that gets more minimalist and a little bit, as you say, trippy. but this is really the kind of work she was producing in the 1960s. Some of these big, abstract kinds of prints, even larger than this one.
On the other side of the gallery, it's almost as though as you're leaving, if you walked clockwise, is a lot more Yoshida Chizuku work, but this is very different. This is a kind of embossed paper with wave patterns, very recognizable wave patterns, and then there are purple and red and orange, I don't know what that is, ink in the middle behind some of the waves, although the actual embossed white always stands out as white. The second piece is similar, but the background is purple and blue, and the white waves have not been touched by any other color. This seems very, very different from what she was doing. Was she in some kind of papermaking tradition? And this was 12 years later, 1972.
By this time, her practice, I mean, she'd been working in printmaking for quite some time by now. And it's interesting if you compare it with her husband, Hodaka, who I don't bring up as an influence, but I think, you know, they shared a studio and worked side by side. I know that he began experimenting with photo engraving in his woodblock prints, and she starts to do that around this time in the 1970s also. Not in these prints. These are still woodblock prints, and the what you've referred to as white embossing, it's just the white of the paper, which is just so remarkable to me. It's textural, and there's that sculptural quality that only really is possible with that really thick, beautiful paper that some of these artists, Japanese artists, were using. Here, though, she's really, you see the influences of some op art, some minimalism. She's clearly looking to some other influences. But what's interesting is she never goes fully back to abstraction. So this landscape in blue, as it's called, with the blue below and violet up above and these white swirls in the center, they're still a referent. I mean, she's still thinking of it as a landscape, even though it's not representational in any other way. I think these are just some of the most striking works by her in our collection.
Do you know how she did the actual texture of the paper? Is this a part of doing a wood block print?
You can get similar embossing in straight woodblock printing using traditional techniques. Here, the paper that she's using is much thicker than you would have seen, say, 200 years prior. And so I think she's using a press in this case. I know that she experimented very briefly with Arthur Florey was in Tokyo at one point, and they did some lithographic printing and a little bit of intaglio printing. So I think they had access to a press. I'm not exactly sure where, though. But you would dampen the paper. You would create a structure, probably with plywood. Was probably what they were using. And then probably use a press to apply extra pressure.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Jeannie Kenmutsu. She's the curator of Japanese art at the Portland Art Museum, and she's here talking about Joryu Hanga Kyokai, 1956 to 65, Japan's women printmakers. On the west wall of the gallery, there's a lot of work by Iwami Reika. She has one outstanding piece to me. It's untitled, and it's dated from the 1950s, and it's purple, black, yellow, sort of golden yellow, and then gray. All these shapes, they look to me like bits of letterface, you know, commas and serifs and things on a black background. They're very modern, very sort of 1920s classic modernism, but it kind of contrasts with the rest of her work here. So, and these are color woodblock prints with mica on paper. Just tell us a bit about this kind of variation in style with Iwami Reika.
Well, you picked right up on it, Joseph. This is not a typical work that I think Iwami Reika fans are used to seeing. In fact, I had never seen a print by her that looked quite like this. It does hang, I think. You know, it it's not a stepchild of her work. I mean, you can see some of the where she's headed. But I located this in one of the private collections that we've borrowed from and was so astonished to see it. I had to ask, is this really Iwami-san? It's so interesting because this really is pure abstraction. She later moves into the kind of work that you see to the left and right of it, where she's looking particularly at like imagery of the sea and the moon and so forth. But this is really, she doesn't title it. It's really a kind of like exploring shapes and forms. And Iwami-san was quite interesting because she didn't come from a visual arts background. She did come from a maker background. She was training very seriously to become a maker of traditional Japanese dolls. So she had experience with carving wood, and a lot is really made of that in her transition to woodblock printmaking. And I think you can see it in this untitled print, that she's sort of exploring these organic shapes, and you can almost sort of see her tools move around the block of wood blocks of wood that she would have been using.
The works next to this by Iwami Reika, one is called Work 60-16. It's pretty abstract. I mean, it looks like two black squares and then a sort of white shield shape floating behind them, all on a gray background with a red slash up the middle, and then a sort of falling away black solid rectangle. It's very abstract, but then when you go to the next one, Sea Evening Calm, that's like sea like the ocean. That looks like, you know, the moon going down in the ocean and some wooden piers and then maybe some fishing net. So some of it is quite figurative and some of it is very abstract. What was she known for at the time, and do you have any sense of how she rated herself? What was she most proud of?
At the time, Iwami was really known for these quite large... I mean, I've seen pictures of her. She was, even by Japanese standards, I think quite petite. And if you think about how large these sheets of paper are and the kinds of... Probably she was using plywood to some extent, like a hard plywood. But nevertheless, these would be pretty heavy pieces to move around in a studio. So there's I think there's an interesting manual dexterity that's evident in her work. What's often said is that she would pick up pieces of driftwood, and my understanding is that's a bit of a conceit, that in fact she was selecting pieces of wood that kind of, the wood grain really spoke to her. And so they do look like driftwood, and her images are often of the sea. In the one where Joseph is describing, where it almost looks like the sun going down or the moon rising, there's a form that looks like a net. And it may well have been a kind of probably a plastic netting that she dipped into ink and laid across the paper or laid into her matrix in order to print from. I would love to know what she was most proud of. I really don't know. And that's one of the things I think about this show. If I could rewind time 10 years or 20 and interview each of these artists, I think it would be really revealing. There are so many holes and lacunae in what we know about their careers, their professional careers, and what they really thought about it, how they felt about being female artists in the 1950s and 60s in Japan at the time.
Would you think of them as like a school of painters, you know, who all get together and socialize and influence each other stylistically or intellectually? Or were they doing their own work and just coming together because they were women and just kind of bonding because, like, almost... you know, to stick together so they get more recognition? How would you say the group dynamics worked?
Yeah, I don't think they were like a school. And I think that's something you really see in the gallery, that There's no one unified aesthetic in here. Taken as a whole, it's maybe a little bit loud just because things are so different from artist to artist. That said, I think the group dynamic was absolutely one of solidarity, of kind of, I don't know, in 2020 terms, we might call it even activism in a way. Art societies in Japan in the 1950s were critically important to establishing a career, and few of those societies had women artists in them. So to come together and produce exhibitions was really quite remarkable. We do have in the exhibition some ephemera from the group, and there's a photograph of the women from their first exhibition all together that is a little bit blurry because it came from about 2 inches wide, and we've blown it up to 6 inches. But we've got guest books here that are signed by Japanese visitors to the shows, as well as French visitors, American visitors, and the pamphlets and brochures that they produce to advertise the show. I've seen some really great photographs of them together that are clearly just casual snapshots, and they're often sitting around a table together, and they either look like they're having a great time, and there's maybe a baby bouncing on someone's lap, because of course several of them were full-time mothers as well. But also they look pretty serious in some of them, and I think it was when they came together for their exhibitions that they planned. And I mean, it's a little bit romantic on my part, but I have this image of them sort of scheming, drawing up plans for the next show or for the next endeavor.
Enokido Maki has three pieces in the corner. The one that really grabbed me was kind of a spiral. It's called Efflorescence P, like Peter. It's a color etching and aquatint on paper. So it's this sort of, you know, like a fossil kind of spiral with what the center is yellow and black. It looks like the center of a sunflower. And then as it rotates outwards, there are other circles within the main black spiral, which look like kind of octopus suckers. And then around the edge are points coming off. So you could be like looking at the cross section of a shell. So tell us a bit about Enokido Maki.
Enokido was one of the artists who joined in later years, and she joined, I think, toward the end of the group's run in 1963. She's a little bit younger than some of the founding members. Her work is, I mean, it looks like it's already fully mature here, I think. The use of color is kind of wild in some ways, and these kind of spiraling forms that she is experimenting with. People have said that she was looking at sunflowers, and I think this efflorescence pea with its kind of deep purple exterior and then these yellow, almost like seed pods in the center, I think you can get that sense of a sunflower sort of unfolding, the idea of flowering, as we translate kaika in Japanese. You know, it's both in the act of and already have happened. And I think actually these prints really speak to that. But I also uncovered a small monochrome work by her that's also in the show. And it really suggests to me that she was also thinking about kind of primordial forms also. Because this work, to me, it's almost like you've seen something in the fossil record, you know, sort of a cross-section of a lost organism that is, you know, also sort of coming into being even as it's static at the same time. I get quite mesmerized by some of what she's doing with ink, on the surface of the paper.
That one you're talking about, it's untitled, circa 1963. It's all black and white. It could be, you know, like a microscopic image of a louse, you know, or a tick, some kind of a tiny animal. What is it? It's etching an aquatint on paper. So again, she etched the whole thing with a tiny stylus.
Yeah, I've actually asked my colleague Mary Weaver Chapin, our curator of prints and drawings, about her work, because you can't see a plate mark on her sheet, but I think she's combining some techniques. I mean, you can see that the black in these prints, it's this deep, dark, inky black with then these really fine lines held in reserve of the white of the paper. So her technique would also have been, I'm sure, labor intensive in its own respects, particularly these prints that involve color as well, because in some cases she might have been mixing it on the same plate, so you get these kind of organic, as you say, octopus-like tendrils coming out that mix color. But in other cases, it would have involved extra runs through the press and would have taken quite a bit of time to think through. I did come across some interesting press from the period, and I have to say, it's even with a historical lens, you really see the kind of everyday sexism that they would have encountered. There's this one great photo spread that they got in 1963, and they must have been so excited to have the coverage. The photographs of them working in their studios are great, but the captions to the images are things like, at one point the reporter calls them like mama-san printmakers, like mommy artists, essentially. And I think that kind of thing was probably just happening all the time. So I think I like to see them breaking the mold in this way. I think it's important to represent.
Is there any sense that they were part of an avant-garde in Japan? I'm kind of confused. Like, 1960s Japan must have been more restrictive than the kind of Mad Men American 1960s, you know. They must have had very much freedom, given what you said, trying to enter a male world. But then they probably were, you know, reading media and finding out what's going on in California, things like that. Do you think they were pushing boundaries for Japan and for women?
I absolutely think they were pushing boundaries for Japan and for women. I mean, there's a way to be avant-garde in the, you know, anointed art world, and this was not the group that was, you know, it's not who art history has brought. You know, we have Gutai, we have High Red Center, we have, you know, artists associated with the Informel group, we have the Bokujinkai, which is an avant-garde calligraphic group active all at this time. Those are primarily male-dominated groups, though, and so there are certain women artists that were associated with them. But I think for printmakers, there are other ways to push the envelope, and then there are ways to be sort of avant-garde in your role in society. And I think absolutely this group was conscious of that. And I know we're almost out of time, so you'll probably have to cut this. But one other artist who's in the south wall of the gallery, Uchima Toshiko, really speaks to this. She and her husband left Japan in 1959. They're both artists. Uchima Anse was her husband. They went to New York City, and I think one of the reasons that they left was to find opportunities elsewhere, and to you know, 1960s Japan, I think, was more restrictive for artists of any gender than even the United States at the time, and I think looking for that freedom was a driving factor.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Jeannie Kenmutsu. She's the curator of Japanese art at the Portland Art Museum. She was talking about Joryu Hanga Kyokai, 1956 to 1965, Japan's women printmakers. which runs at the museum now through April 2021. Thank you so much for doing Art Focus, Jeannie.
Thank you, Joseph. This was really fun.
Hi, I'm Joseph Gallivan, the host of Art Focus. I'm asking you to help support us with our fall fundraising goal. We're trying to raise $60,000. Have you got any extra funds you can donate right now? Then go to kboo.fm and click on the donate button. Join the thousands of KBOO members who believe in volunteer-powered, listener-supported community radio today.
Andy walking, Andy tired, Andy take a little snooze. Tie him up when he's fast asleep, send him on a pleasant cruise. When you wake up on the sea, be sure to think of me and you. To think about paint and to think about glue, what a jolly boring thing to do. Andy, whoa, whoa, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. Andy, whoa, whoa, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen.
Estás escuchando KBOO Portland por el 90.7 FM y transmitiendo en línea a través de kboo.fm.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7.